This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
There's a well-known product management phrase that, you know, months of programming can save you days of critical thinking. And the idea there is that, you know, how do we talk about it? How do we have a conversation that saves us time, that avoids you having to program anything at all because we know it's the wrong direction? So a little bit of planning, a little bit of discussion, a little bit of model making can usually elevate the conversation so that you can have a better conversation.
Hello and welcome to Bringing Design Closer, and this is HCD. My name is Jerry Scullion and I'm the founder of This Is HCD. I'm a service designer, educator, design coach and podcaster based in the wonderful city of Dublin, Ireland. Now, our goal here is to have conversations that inspire and help move the dial forward for organisations to become more human-centred in their approach to solving complex business and societal problems. A huge thank you to the people who have subscribed to become a patron over the last number of weeks. It's truly appreciated. And my goal here with having this model in place is to meet the needs and meet the costs to produce everything on This Is HCD. And we're still quite a distance away from doing so, but every little helps. If you want to learn more about doing this, you can check out thisishcd.com for more information. In this conversation, I caught up with, in the second part of my conversation, with Scott Jensen to explore how designers can actively get more involved in the free and open source movement that we spoke about in episode one of this conversation. We speak more about why this is of such an interest to Scott, and he gives awesome advice to others who want to get involved. If you haven't listened to episode one on this one, you can go back. There's a link in the show notes. It's well worth listening. It's a really good episode, and I hope you enjoy it. Let's get straight into it. Scott, I'm delighted to welcome back. You are one of the most listened to podcasts of 2022. From last year, we had a great conversation about Fuzz. So I'm delighted to welcome you back. If you just dialed into this episode, folks, and you haven't listened to episode one, it'll be in the show notes. I thoroughly recommend listening to Scott, especially because we're going to be building on that conversation and talking a little bit more about free and open source software. We call that Fuzz. So if you hear us talking about Fuzz in this, that is what we were referring to. So Scott, for people who are more familiar with your work, maybe give us a bite size on what you're up to at the moment.
At the moment, I am working, I'm semi-retired, and I'm working on ways in which I can get more actively involved. So I have got a couple of irons in the fire, and I hope to make an announcement in a few weeks as to the next project I'm starting.
Yeah, but you've been so kind of prolific in your career over the last 20, 30 years, especially in the space of user experience. It's really interesting to hear your take on Fuzz in particular. So I'm going to start off the conversation here. I want to understand why Scott cares so much about Fuzz. What is it about Fuzz that really sort of piques your interest?
Sure. What I will also just say up the top is that open source has many names, right? Open source, free and open source, FOSS, and free and also FLOSS. So there's many ways of referring to it. I might just say open source just to be more clear. The main reason I was attracted to it is that I have done quite a bit of research and work into next generation UX. And I have found that in the commercial operating systems, there is very little appetite for kind of moving and trying new things. So I really wanted to go to open source to say, do some of this work and to say, let's just build something out. Let's try it out. And when I started in open source, I just went to a couple of small projects just to get started, just to try it out. And by the way, I maintained an open source project at Google. So I was doing it as a maintainer, but as trying to do UX and open source, I had so much trouble and so much drama that I ended up talking about it and writing about it. And that's where I actually found myself getting a lot of traction. So I just gave my third talk at FOSBAC last week on UX and open source. So I've been And people seem to want to talk about it more, so I'm finding a bit of an audience there. But I'll say I'm kind of reluctantly talking about it because I want to get to the research, right? But I'm talking about it as a general point because there just seems to be so much to talk about.
Now, you just mentioned there, you just dropped it in that you were doing a talk at FOSPAC, and it was the third one. Okay, so this was a trilogy. It's like the George Lucas of Star Wars. The first one.
That's overstating it just a bit, but yes.
So you've just done Return of the Jedi. So the first one, let's talk about the first one. The first talk you did, I understand, was really discussing the problem. Now, let's talk a little bit more around that. What problem were we focusing on in that first talk?
It was just how UX people are like trying to get in and they just keep bouncing off of it. And there's a whole series of things that kind of prevent UX people from getting involved. And if you do get in and someone asks you for something, 90% of the time they're like, hey, we're so glad you're here. We would love for you to rework all of our icons. And like, and that's like, okay, you know, icons are fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But like, there's so much more to UX than just icons. The comment I make in my first talk is, imagine you're as a programmer, imagine that the only thing people want to talk to you about is unit tests. Unit tests are great. You need to do unit tests. But if you only talk about unit tests, it gets a little old. And so my point in the first talk was to say UX is bigger than icons. And what does that mean? And how do we do that? So that's why I just wanted people to understand why UX people were bouncing.
Yeah. And what kind of feedback were you getting after the first talk at FOSPAC about trying to educate the FOS community or the open source community about what user experience or what design can be for them?
I think if there's one thing I have learned, because as a UX person, you understand that your first job is to ask questions, right? To not come in with answers, to try not to be arrogant, which is hard for me sometimes. But the idea is to just ask questions. And so I've discovered that open source is huge and many different types. And so there is no one size fits all. And so just understanding that and realizing that a lot of projects don't want to do UX, and that's perfectly fine. And some of them want more of it. And so to me, it's just all about having a conversation and to say, let's talk about it and see if we can find ways to improve it. So I've got good traction on that first one, which is why I felt it was helpful to follow up with additional talks.
So for people out there listening, this episode is really focused about call to arms, really, for the design community. If they want to get involved in this new world, like the open source world, we want to figure out some pragmatic ways that you can actually get involved. Okay, now, in terms of engaging with these businesses and these softwares, what advice do you give to people who you meet who might want to offer their help? Because if you've got organizations that are in software businesses, and they kind of think of user experience as just being iconography or whatever it is, they're not really going to be able to put out job descriptions that are really going to resonate with the more mature designers out there. So how do you imagine, what's the best way for designers to approach that to get in? And also, what's the type of typical engagement model there? Are they able to pay, or is it equity? What does that look like in your experience?
I'll go back to my last point, which is to say there's such a wide variety.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some projects, for example, that will, there's government programs, for example, that will pay for UX designers to do consulting for free. So I'm talking to a few on that right now. There's a lot of open source that is fairly well funded, like say Penpot or Audacity, for example.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that are entirely volunteer. So because it's such a wide landscape, I don't think there's a simple answer to that.
Yeah.
But to answer your original question, which is what do you want to do, how do you approach it? I would argue that there is enough out there that you should go to the project and make sure the project says the word UX somewhere on its contribution guidelines, you know, that there's asking for UX, because there are projects that are much more forward looking. So my last talk said, open source has got such a black eye. So many people say open software has terrible UX. And there are some good examples of that.
Yeah.
But I do believe that there are some open source projects that have got great UX. And I called out like Audacity or MetaMuse. And the operating systems like GNOME and Endless are other good examples. So there's lots of projects out there that are trying. And so look around and try to find a project that clearly asks for UX. And if you don't see it, then don't waste your time. Because I have tried to help out projects that didn't have mature UX, and it was really painful. So go to the good ones.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. That's solid advice. So we'll put a link to some of those ones that you just mentioned there into the show notes as well. That last talk that you were speaking about in the sort of prelude to the conversation, you focus mostly around culture. Tell us a little bit more around the topic and maybe expand a little bit more around what you mean by the culture.
Well, part of the issue I've been having is I have been slowly getting an audience in social media. You know, I've switched mostly from Twitter to Mastodon these days. Yeah. So I've been getting a lot of really great conversations on Mastodon. And whenever I do make comments, I tend to get a lot of reply guys, you know, in the comments that kind of take me to task. And people keep telling me to understand that those people are not necessarily the entire open source community. But I did get a lot of comments about, you know, centralized planning is bad and, you know, it should also be bottom up. And so I was trying to just tackle that question, especially given the fact that I interviewed about these eight of these companies to see how they were doing UX, and they were all doing planning. And when I mentioned that, I got an awful lot of very strong comments on Mastodon about how evil planning was. And I'm like, guys, planning happens all the time, right? If you submit a change to an open source project, a PR, it gets rejected. Okay. Being rejected, it can be rejected. That's a form of planning. It's just micro planning. And so my point is, you guys are planning. You just don't like to call it that. So let's realize that effectively planning is a floating point, not a Boolean. If you don't do it, you don't do it. There's levels of planning. So let's talk about lightweight, simple planning and realize that if you move the conversation upstream from the code check-in, you will get better quality discussions. You will save an awful lot of effort. And all of a sudden, your UX designers are no longer arrogant. I heard that a lot. UX designers are arrogant. And I would argue they're not necessarily arrogant. They just don't understand the culture or the constraints. Mm. And so by having these conversations earlier, you get UX designers that get it, that understand what you're after, and they produce solutions that you want as a maintainer. So that's what I mean by culture, is realizing that UX is a team sport.
It's interesting because you mentioned that some of these projects are kind of side of table, they're volunteer based. And a lot of the developers that are working in those kind of projects are more than likely really talented developers. They're coming from established organizations where they are encountering design and they're encountering designers. So for them to bring that sort of perspective on where design is at into their side project is kind of really, it's interesting to hear you say that. Like, you know, where do you think it's coming from? Is it coming from Agile, this whole kind of mentality of being able to do things on the fly and just working with each other? And well, what's really causing this? What's underpinning that dislike and disregard for the craft?
Well, I want to be really careful. I don't think that the entire open source community is like this at all.
Yeah,
I think what I'm noticing is what we see, frankly, in political discourse, that social media tends to magnify the stronger voices, the more angry voices. So I do think that maybe I'm just talking to grumpy people online, and I really have to be careful, you know, as to how I interpret that. So I would push back a little bit in your talk to say, I actually think that there's a lot of really good open source projects that really want to do the right thing and are really working well. And that's what I mean by the fact that we should just realize, like, head towards the good projects. Like, I kind of don't want to talk about the bad projects because they're going to do their own thing. And I don't want to argue with them. I'm going to be like, hey, the projects that care about UX, that are doing more planning, they're going to do awesome. So let's just focus on them.
Yeah. I have a really, Adam Lawrence, who's a good friend of mine from this service design doing, he has a great phrase where he calls the lumpers and the splitters. And there's always going to be people out there who really, you know, split atoms and really focus on the wrong things. And then there's the lumpers, the people who really are on your side, who get it. They're part of the same sort of vision. So I like what you're saying there in terms of, like, let's focus on the lumpers. You don't focus on the splitters in that analogy, folks. So let's talk a little bit more around that word that you mentioned there a second ago. It begins at P and ends in Lanning, planning. I want to understand where you feel the pressure point is there and where the pushback is in planning. Okay. And how can we elaborate the conversation around that?
I think what there is some belief that it's better to just simply program it up, see what it's like, and talk about it. And so there's this a belief that if you talk too much, you're going to bike shed, you know, the whole bike shedding argument. There's a Wikipedia article on bike shedding if you want to look that up.
Okay.
And I want to agree with it in spirit, but the idea that you would stampede into a bunch of coding isn't always necessarily the right answer. And so there's like two wrong extremes: to run off and program the whole thing and see what happens, and to run off and bike shed and analyze it to death. And so UX designers are lumped into the analyze category, and, and developers are lumped into the go off and program. And obviously the answer is somewhere in between. There's a well-known product management phrase that, you know, months of programming can save you days of critical thinking. And the idea there is that, you know, how do we talk about it? How do we have a conversation that saves us time, that avoids you having to program anything at all because we know it's the wrong direction? So a little bit of planning, a little bit of discussion, a little bit of model making can usually elevate the conversation so that you can have a better conversation.
It's usually the focus on prototyping and the understanding that what they're actually creating is a prototype. That sort of discourse is really powerful when you have the developer on board, because the reason why what I like to say to developers is, like, would you like to be building something and knowing it's the wrong thing and knowing that you're going to have to flush it down the toilet in 6 months? And they're like, no. And I'm like, okay, well, let's do the least amount of work that's going to give us the most amount of reward back by prototyping. And to lean into the service design mindset is the first shitty draft. And we really lean into that whole kind of thing of saying, listen, look, we're not putting much skin into the game here. We're just trying to get some experiments. We just want to try and see what works and what doesn't work. And having those kind of conversations versus talking from designer speak, like designer-ese, really, really goes an awful long way. So in terms of your talk, you spoke about culture and planning, okay? And I know you mentioned the reply guys, which I've never heard before, but I really like, because you paint a nice picture of these people just constantly replying. What was the questions and what was the feedback that came back from the talk, the recent talk at Fosbach?
Well, because it was virtual, and most people were actually in the conference themselves. Unfortunately, I got very little feedback. So I am hoping that once it goes live on YouTube, which should be in a day or two, we'll get a lot more. By the way, I just want to add to the last comment about prototyping. One of the ways I think as a designer is that you try to speak the developer's language. And I think, again, everybody's heart is in the right place, right? It's really important to be generous in your conversations, and always assume best intentions. So when a programmer wants to go off and code, I don't disagree with their desires. All I say is there's ways of prototyping that is faster than compiling code.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like wireframes or whatever you want to come up with. So I'm saying is, you know what? I want to prototype too, but I can prototype a hell of a lot faster than you. And so let's try to do these really fast, sketchy things and just see where the conversation goes. And then we can talk about so it's about everybody wanting the same thing, but just having slightly different ways of doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also the fidelity. I mean, using fidelity as a lever to really enable conversations. If it's really high fidelity and it's in code, people will believe that it's finished and it's polished and it's ready to be shipped. And the quality of the feedback that you get back is much lower than
Yep.
If it's in a paper form or whatever it is. So leaning into that is a really solid way to approach.
And
it.
One of the things I do, so I do mentoring on ADP List, which is a UX design mentor program. And one of the comments I make often is that if your manager, your company is constantly demanding high fidelity mockups, you've got a problem.
Yeah.
Right. Because you're going to be, I mean, you can do it, but you're just going to be wasting so much time.
Absolutely. We're going around in circles. So Scott, like, you know, what in terms of the designers that are out there that are listening, I know several who said to me, like, they listened to that and they wanted to get involved. Are there any job boards out there where you may be able to point people to, or how can they find these opportunities? I know you mentioned about, you know, searching and then looking for the word UX and so forth. But do you know of any resources that are out there that that designers listening could actually just go to and see if there's a jobs board? That might be a handy place to start.
There is a small website called opensourcedesign.net, which is definitely a start. Their jobs board isn't very active, but they have a few small things to get started. And that's one place to start. It's a nice community there. And I think that they're trying hard to do that. But I definitely think that there is a definite need there to be able to have more ways for people to do that. So I think that there is no strong answer to give to you on that one, unfortunately.
No, that's okay. If you hear of any other jobs and you want me to share them in the newsletter, we can always put them in. This is HCD newsletter because it's something I believe in. I love the idea of open source software being much better. Okay, it's better for everyone. It challenges those conventions of capitalism, which I really, really like. And ultimately, it kind of betters us as a practice as well, I believe. Like, you know, like Penpot, when I looked at it afterwards, when we spoke to you the last time, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that some of this stuff is just available there. We don't get to see it in our feeds, surprise, surprise, in social media, because, you know, they don't have these massive budgets of marketing spend to push when they're competing against the Adobes or any of these other huge design platforms. So, Scott, like, you know, in terms of what you're going to be, you know, working on next, you just gave your Return of the Jedi talk, your last talk at Fosspy. Where do you see your efforts being best placed in the next 6 to 12 months in this space? Because you're a design veteran, as you like to say. I don't like the word veteran, but you're mega experienced in design coming from Google and Apple and Symbian. Where do you think all that experience can be best leveraged?
Well, that's my own personal journey. And I'm trying to find a place where I can feel like I'm having an impact. And like I said, I don't have anything to announce just yet. But what I will say is I think that there are a few programs out there that are trying to do the right thing. I don't have them off the top of my head, so I will give them to you afterwards and you can put them in the notes. I believe that there is there's a program in Europe I will link to that is doing some work. So I would just argue that you have to find what you want to do. So for example, if there is a utility that you like and you want to help out, that is awesome, right? But at the same time, last year, I actually went with a company called Ink and Switch, and they do open source research and trying to advance UX. And so we did a project on coming up with kind of a decentralized version of Google Docs. And our paper was just published 2 weeks ago. And so that was an example of me doing research with a small group of dedicated people. I will admit that it was paid work. But all the research is open, all the code is open, and the goal is to build out these technologies. So that was one project I was really glad I did. And you know, I'm always looking for projects like that, because there's supporting open source, which feels like regular production work, but done through the culture of open source. And then there's what I'm trying to find, which is more open source research. You know, we're kind of pushing the edge. And that's a little harder to find. And that's something that I'm still exploring.
It's interesting because being able to do that work, it's really interesting. Okay. But it comes somewhat, and this is not speaking about you, but from a place of privilege, being able to do that stuff, working on it freely.
Oh, I completely agree.
So like with people out there who are listening and they want to do it, you know, many people, myself included, need to work on stuff that brings money, unfortunately, into the situation.
Yeah, totally.
With these organizations, what's the end game apart from, and I know you're going to be, I know the answer straight away when you're going to say that, with the end game, is it a case where the bigger organizations tend to look at these and either take the business and try and procure it, or is it a case of just trying to fly under the radar and look at a way to commercialize it further down the track?
So there's a whole, if you search for the word open core, you'll find, I think there's a Wikipedia article about it and there's a couple of articles about it. And so Penpot, for example, is that way, which is there's a group of people that are funded, that have money, that hire people. It's a company, but everything that they do is open source. Right. Okay. And then there's projects that are entirely volunteer driven. And I would argue that there is, and this needs to be discussed more in the community, but that the funded projects that I interviewed tended to have much better user experience, practice, and maturity than the volunteer ones.
Right.
Which is not a surprise. And it's also not a surprise that a lot of the reply guys hate the open funding model, thinking that it's not pure. Right. And I don't, that's a philosophical conversation. I mean, that's at least a 2-pint conversation. And we need to be careful about getting into the details of that one. But what I will say is that there are companies that are, or like say, for example, the blogging platform Ghost, you know, another really good product, completely open source, and they make money by doing a server on top. Nabucasa is a company that's doing an IoT service, which I think is fantastic. And they have a completely open source model for controlling devices in your home. All the data is stored locally, goes to nowhere in the cloud. You're entirely in control, but they have a little service that you pay for $5 a month that funds the entire work operation. So this idea of having everything be done in an open source way, but having a side gig that pays for it, I think is a very powerful model. And it doesn't produce billions of dollars, but it produces enough. That you can have 5 to 10 people. And so part of what I think people need to do is when you are looking for jobs, just see if they have an open source component to them, right? You don't have to be Linux, you know, which is kind of like the ultimate, you know, example of pure open source. There's an awful lot of smaller operations that are doing variations of this that might be worthwhile to people to check out.
Okay. Now that's good. Cause that's, I know that was one of the burning questions from the last episode that we did, like, okay, I'd like to do it, but at the same time, you know, I got bills to pay. And I was like, okay, well, I'll ask Scott. Now, before we wrap up this conversation, you on Mastodon are one of the most prolific Mastodoners, okay, in terms of being on there and talking and sharing content. Who do you look to in this space to also follow? Absolutely. If anyone's on Mastodon, follow Scott Jensen. Fantastic. But who else do you follow in this space to really stay up to date on it?
I would argue that there is just a ton of people out there. What I like about Mastodon is that you can follow hashtags. And so I would just follow #open source. And #UX or UX design. And then you're exposed to the whole panoply of people that are having the discussion. And what I like, again, about the Mastodon web client is that I actually follow a hashtag that has open source and UX. So therefore, I can get a subset of the posts and I can see what people are talking about. And that's where a lot of the good discussion happens.
Okay. Scott, is there anything else you want to cover off before we wrap up this episode? Or are you happy enough that we've covered off the main topics?
I think we've covered, you know, most of them. I just want to end up by stressing that, as I said in the beginning, open source is huge and it has a wide variety of things. And I don't want anyone coming away thinking that I had a simplistic answer for any particular thing in open source, but to say, depending on what side of the elephant you're talking about, there's a different answer. So it's a huge space.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, listen, look, Scott, thanks for making time for myself and the listeners on This Is HCD. As I said, the first episode that we did was really, really popular, and I know a lot of people always love to hear from you. So we'll put a link to your own website into the show notes as well for people to stay up to date with everything that Scott is doing, and also to the Mastodon as well. So I encourage people to get on Mastodon, get away from that sewer of Twitter that I like to call it at the moment, and get over onto Mastodon, folks. That's where all the interesting and all the nice people seem to be living these days.
All the cool kids, Scott,
thanks so much for your time. I really appreciated your vulnerability and your openness about chatting about this topic. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
There you go, folks. I hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you enjoyed it and want to listen to more, why not visit thisishcd.com, where you can learn more about what we're up to and also explore our courses whilst you're there. Thanks again for listening.